Hello, and welcome to the Hull Libraries podcast. In this episode, we had a chat with local crime writer Nick Quantrill. Be sure to check out his website, nickquantrill.co.uk, or follow him on Twitter for more info about his books and news on latest releases. So we talked to Nick about setting novels in your home city, going from short stories to full-length books, organising fiction festivals, and where to bury the bodies.
I think I've always been a big reader, really. I was a big reader when I was a child, and I think it goes back to reading those. You know, you ask a lot of crime writers, what was you reading as a child? And it's the same things. It's Enid Blyton and the Famous Five, then through to sort of Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes. There's kind of like a line, there's almost like a rites of passage you go through. And I stopped reading when I was a teenager, really. And like a lot of kind of 14, 15-year-old boys, when the world suddenly becomes a lot more interesting and reading seemed like something really boring and uncool. So I stopped reading for a long time. And I kind of went back to it when I was studying with the Open University. And I was studying social policy and criminology. And I just picked up, I think it was just kind of a random Ian Rankin novel. And I kind of realised that what I was studying was what was in the novels in a lot of ways, but just a lot more entertaining in novels. And, you know, the Open University changed my life, really, because I didn't use my qualifications from in any kind of meaningful way in a work situation. It just gave me so much motivation again, and so much kind of desire to do something. And when I finished it after 6 years, I suddenly had all this time on my hands again, and I kind of, you know, I was energised and motivated. So I thought, I'm going to write a short story. And by then I was reading more and more Ian Rankin books and all those type of crime writers. So it was just natural that I wrote a short story that was crime flavoured. And I finished that, and I wrote another one, and I wrote another one. And it kind of just went from there. You know, it's kind of like, it's like an addiction, but, you know, a relatively safe addiction, I suppose. And I kind of wrote a couple of novellas that were maybe about 15,000 words. And I think after maybe a year or 18 months of doing short stories and getting them published online on these kind of like websites, I just thought, oh, I've got to write a novel. You know, you kind of think, how hard can it be? And you start doing it, and you realise it's actually quite hard.
Do you find it is quite a different process then from a short story to a novel?
You're trying to write a short story, maybe a couple of thousand words. So you know, everything has to happen, you know, bang on the page. You know, you can't waste a single word when you're writing a short story. They're almost like a snapshot, I think, aren't they, really, of something that a moment in time or something that a character's doing at that particular moment. Where a novel, you've got to think a lot more about the structure of the novel. You've got to think about the subplots. There's all sorts of things you have to consider in a novel to make it work over, you know, 90,000 words compared to maybe something that's 2,000 words. It's very, very different sort of skills and approaches, I think. So, yeah, I think it's feel like a natural progression to go from short stories to writing something longer, and I kind of just give it a go.
It's interesting that you hadn't done a, I don't know, qualification in creative writing. It was a completely different course. So how did you then get your brain and mindset into, I don't know if it was a piece of paper or your laptop, to actually start writing? What, how did you go about it?
I just started.
Literally just started. Was it in your head anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, a short story is something that you can kind of do almost in one sitting. You know, a couple of thousand words, it sounds sort of intimidating maybe if you haven't done a lot of writing before, but it's something you can start and finish in a short period of time, and you can kind of get some satisfaction from it. Where writing a novel is a bit more like kind of marathon running, in the sense that you spend weeks and weeks working, and it feels like you've maybe got, you know, you've got 10,000 words or something, 20,000 words, but it's only like a quarter of a novel or something. It's such a long, drawn-out process. So it's kind of not as rewarding in the same way, I suppose. It's not as instantly rewarding. So, yeah, but it was just really just sitting down and going for it. You know, I think as you said, I've not done any writing courses. You know, and I know there's lots of different ways you can do that, through publishing companies or through for the library service. You know, there's always different sort of opportunities out there. But I think reading was my apprenticeship as a writer. You know, I read so much, and I read so much that you just kind of soak it up, I think. You know, you start to understand that all novels work in the same way fundamentally. You know, you often have three acts within a novel. Something bad happens at the start. Something will then kind of carry on for the main character. They'll start to win and start to crack the case, but then he'll turn on his head and they'll start to lose, and they'll be tested more and more. And then you come to the climax of the novel, where they will then hopefully overcome the kind of the trauma they're trying to overcome, or the bad guy. So, you know, everything kind of works in the same way, really, when you start to break it down. And I think reading a lot kind of just meant I soaked that kind of those lessons up, really, without really sort of recognising it or really realising it at the time. But that was my way of learning, I think.
Because a lot of writers have a little book or something that would jot ideas down? How do you record those things that pop in your head when you may be out and about and didn't expect it to be there?
I think it's a notebook, but it's kind of a digital notebook because I use my phone, you know. I'll suddenly just kind of open a notepad on my phone, just tapping a sentence or two, and, you know, I kind of look back at it maybe a couple of weeks later and think, what on earth was I thinking? What does that mean? So I'm a believer that if it's a really good idea, it'll stick in your head. And I kind of like the idea of letting it trying to just stay there for a week or so. And if I can remember it, then maybe there's an idea there. If I can't remember it a couple of days later, then maybe it wasn't a great idea after all. So I kind of I like to play a sort of Russian roulette with that a little bit. Just, you know, just take a chance that if I think of something, I'll let it just sit there and percolate for a bit. And if it feels like it's got legs, it will kind of stick around. If it hasn't, it'll just kind of disappear off back into the ether somewhere. But yeah, you know, I think having a notepad, having a sort of like my phone on hand, you know, just making notes all the time is kind of, it's kind of part of being a writer almost. You know, people ask, you know, when you're writing, how long you're writing for, and it might only be an hour or so on your laptop, but, you know, constantly when I'm maybe walking somewhere, I'm thinking about what I'm going to write the next day or how I'm going to write the next scene, or, you know, just thinking, you know, that sort of being away from the laptop and thinking is as much part of the writing process as the actual sitting down at a laptop and writing, I think.
A lot of people have different techniques and approaches. Do you set yourself so many hours a day, a week, as a bit like a job to sit and get it done? Or do you have to have a break from it and revisit it? And if it's in your head, you're just constantly writing for hours. How do you go about it?
I think it's probably more, it's more a routine, and it's a routine because I do it around other things as well. You know, I'm kind of a festival organizer. I work part-time elsewhere. And probably most importantly, in terms of writing and structure, is I'm the main sort of school-run person in the household. So that means I kind of have between about 9 and 3 o'clock to write. And, you know, I'll probably spend too much time messing around on Twitter and Facebook to start with for the day. And I'll increasingly panic as the time ticks along.
Yeah, 2 o'clock's a dodgy time.
2 o'clock is like bang on the laptop, let's get out of this work. But having that kind of defined structure is really helpful because it means, you know, I can't mess around too much. I've got to kind of use those hours to write. So, yeah, I quite like that, to be honest. Yeah, it's kind of like a nice kind of sort of routine to have, really.
And you mentioned festival organisers. What's that for?
Me and my friends, we organised the Hull Noir Crime Writing Festival, which we first did it in person in part of the City of Culture celebrations. We were that kind of rare breed who got some funding from the City of Culture people to do it, which was nice. And we put on a brilliant week of kind of events in the city as part of it. We loved it. It was great getting all these crime writers to come to Hull.
Who did you get?
And Martina Cole was our headliner.
Fantastic.
Matt Billingham and John Connolly, you know, just, you know, fantastic crime writers. People like Ian Mukherjee, who's now kind of a bestseller, you know, he came along and just as he put out his debut, I think it was at the time. So yeah, it was a really kind of great weekend, and we did some workshops with Hull Libraries. You know, we kind of partnered with all sorts of different organisations in the city. We worked with the Hull Independent Cinema people to put like a series of films on in the View Cinema. It was brilliant, and we kind of eventually got the funding to do a second one, which was going to be early 2020, and obviously that didn't happen because of the pandemic. So we did it online in 2021 ultimately, which is really kind of nice and kind of fun in a lot of ways, but it's not the same as it's been in a room full of people, of like-minded people as well, you know, readers and writers and fans of crime writing and people who enjoy those type of books. So, you know, we want to do it again. We're in the process of kind of starting up the whole sort of procedure of applying for funding, and we'll be hoping to bring it back to the city. You know, I think probably early next year, fingers crossed. We will see.
And at least you kept it online, because I think it just keeps... You know, your foot in the door really, and keep it kind of going, and you know, people are out there wanting these things, aren't they? We've just got to reach them in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a bit of a game changer for the world of book festivals, you know, particularly and the library service as well. I suspect in the same way that, you know, 2 years ago nobody really knew anything about Zoom, did they, and didn't really put on online events for people, where now I think when we start to piece together our plans for the next festival, it will have to incorporate an element of online.
Yeah,
accessibility, because people value it now. Don't you? People have seen what it's like, and as a reader, I enjoyed an awful lot during lockdown and listening to authors I like beaming in from around their houses, you know, literally anywhere around the world. So
that is the positive in it. You can reach authors that you wouldn't be able to physically get to your city, but you can do a Zoom. So it just opens it up and creates a more, I don't know, fuller program in a way, I guess. So you just got to pull all these positives out of this COVID nightmare that we've got.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's been probably the big win, you know, for me as an individual during COVID, is that is the way it's changed interacting with other readers and writers like that. You know, as a festival organiser, I think the downside as such is trying to make the finances balance, because obviously there's still an awful lot of cost in putting an online event on, but you don't necessarily get the ticket income from it. And it's a, you know, it's a tricky thing to balance up in that sense. But, you know, I think the, you know, the work, it's just what people want, isn't it? And I think when you're putting on events and you're working with public money as well, like we are with the Arts Council, then you have to find a way to make it work. And, you know, and that's kind of, I think, the standard that's going to be set, you know, in terms of hybrid models going forward.
And you've organised this festival, but have you ever been invited as a guest to a similar event?
Oh yeah. I've been very lucky that I've kind of done a lot of festivals. I think probably if I look back on the highlights, I'll probably say getting invited out to Iceland Noir back in 2000 and something, about 2015, I think it was 2014. I went across to Reykjavik for it was only 3 days. You know, my wife was kind of kicking off because she thought, oh, you're off to Reykjavik on a jolly. You know, like, I'm going to talk about my work. It's very important and a very serious business.
It took her with you.
Well, the festival won't stretch of that, unfortunately. But I think I literally flew out of Manchester on the Friday morning. I was back in Hull by sort of late afternoon on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And the festival was on the Saturday. So, you know, I didn't get to do an awful lot of sort of sightseeing as such. I literally got there, went to the festival. I more or less got back on the plane to come home again, but you know, that was an amazing sort of opportunity. And yeah, a lot of the biggest festival in the country is the Harrogate Crime Festival, sponsored by Feakstons, which I got invited to chair a panel there in 2015-ish, something like that, maybe a bit more recently, and included, it was four authors, and one of them was Lee Child, author of the Jacobean novel, you know, probably the best-selling crime author in the world. So that was a little bit scary. There was the best part of 1,000 people in the audience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you kind of sat there interviewing people like that and thinking, wow, how did this happen? This is a little bit crazy. So, yeah, you know, I've been very lucky to go to a lot of these sort of places and get involved in festivals and talk about myself and talk about Hull as part of them.
I love it when authors talk about Hull, because I'm really proud of our city and I think we've got a lot to shout about, but we tend to be a bit quiet about our city. Do you agree? Do you think we're a bit...
Yeah, it was a weird thing when I started writing. Like, I didn't know anybody else who was writing, you know, not just crime novels, just generally. I didn't know anybody who was involved in the arts particularly. You know, it didn't feel like something that we did as a city, even though there was obviously kind of things happening. But yeah, you know, it just felt like when I started to write the first novel, that nobody else had kind of done it almost. You know, nobody had written about Hull in a contemporary way. And it just felt like, you know, it was the only thing I wanted to write about. You know, it was as much about explaining the city to me and my kind of thoughts about it as anything else. You know, it was very kind of important that I wrote about my home city.
And how did you go about getting kind of the content and to get your, I don't know, your ideas about how you describe the city? Did you do any kind of research at History Centre or talk to anybody, or did you?
No, the contemporary novels, which makes it easier. Yeah. You know, so my PI in the novels, Joe Geraghty, is walking the streets that I walk. So, you know, any kind of research is jumping in the car and just heading off to have a look at a certain area and they go, maybe I could chuck a body down there or something.
It's a bit dark, but...
Yeah, it's a little bit dark, especially when you've got your child in the back of the car. We're going out for a little drive, just to see and maybe stash your body down there. So, yeah, that I guess that makes it kind of easier, but also, you know, it's me seeing the city as well, and what I see, you know, could be vastly different to what other people see.
Do you find yourself sitting in parks or something and just absorbing the space so you can put it on paper and describe?
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of about trying to pick off interesting locations. Yeah, you know, after, you know, I've done four novels with Geraghty at the moment, and you know, you kind of think, well, I can't stick him under the bridge again, or I can't kind of go back to St Andrew's sort of quay and stick him in the Lordline building again and have him crash down some broken sort of stairs in that or whatever. You know, I've got to kind of keep trying to find different places that are new to me, and hopefully they're new. You know, for that, if I find them interesting and different and new, then hopefully then that kind of comes across in the book as well. But yeah, the great thing about using a living city is that it's always changing. You know, things are always happening, aren't they? So
it is a lot now in Hull. I think it's changed so much in the next 5 years. It'll be unrecognisable, I think, the city.
Yeah, I mean, things like the fruit market. I think when I started to write the novels, that was still kind of almost the shell it always was. But then the latest novel, Sound of the Sinners, is very much about that development. You know, a lot of the action happens on the fruit market, you know, and it kind of thinks about who won from the city of Culver and who lost from it, you know, where did that money actually kind of go, you know. And as a crime novelist, you've got a lot of license there to be creative with things like that. So, yeah, you know, I think I'm always looking for interesting backdrops in the city, and yeah, and there's always going to be something that's happening or something that's changing, which kind of gives you an impetus to start with.
So this series, when did it start, and how many are you into now?
Yes, I originally wrote, it was originally three books, it was a trilogy, and I wrote them, I think the first one came out in 2011. I'm terrible at it, I can't remember my own dates. And I kind of wrote it, it was about 2011 and 2015, and then I went off and wrote some other things, and I was organising that crime festival about the City of Culture and done a lot of projects with that team for a while. And then those rights to that, to those three Joe Geraghty novels came back to me from the publisher because they were kind of closing down effectively. And I was contacted by a crime publisher called Fahrenheit Press, who were interested in taking them back on. But the deal was like they republished them and put nice new covers on them and everything. I had to write them another Joe Geraghty novel. So that became kind of like what I call the fourth in the trilogy, because I was never expected to do that. But because it was also interesting, because there'd been a gap of about 4 or 5 years between writing books three and four. So the city had changed an awful lot after going through the City of Culture programme. A lot of things had changed, and my character had changed because he'd been away at the end of book three. I've kind of banished him out of Holford, thinking I wouldn't have to kind of write about him ever again, and I suddenly had to bring him back. So, you know, it was a really kind of interesting process as a writer to go out and do that. So, yeah, currently, I think Joe is my kind of tool for writing about Hull, really. So the novel I'm working on at the minute is very different. It's kind of, it's a crime novel, but it's about a young female podcaster. She's desperate to get out of Hull. You know, she wants the big stories, and she wants the world effectively. So she kind of wants, she sees Hull as like a small sort of city, which ain't going to satisfy her ambition. So it's kind of like a very, it was me putting myself into a very different pair of shoes to look at Hull and see, try and look at it through a very different pair of eyes. So yeah, at the minute I'm kind of writing about her and enjoying that an awful lot.
So have you kind of put Joe to bed, or is he ever going to come back?
I put him to one side at the moment, because I always think if Hull, you know, at the minute with COVID and everything, everything feels a little bit static, doesn't it? You know, like we're not really sure what's going to happen, and everything feels a little bit up in the air. But I think once things start to settle again and Hull starts to kind of come alive again, then I'll have things to write about. And I think when I have things to write about Hull, it's through Joe that I'll tell those stories. So
where'd you get your idea about the podcast, girl?
I've always been fascinated by journalism and different ways of news media and how we tell stories and who tells them. And I just think podcasts are such an interesting development, aren't they? Because they can be kind of a leveler, really, can't they? You know, you don't need to necessarily have that massive machine behind you to get those stories out. You know, it's kind of it can be anybody with a laptop and a microphone, can't it? And I just think that's such an interesting opportunity for people who are interested in issues of, you know, in my case, it's sort of like a murder that goes back 30 years. And there's a reason why she wants to investigate that story when necessarily it wouldn't be looked at. You know, it would just be kind of left in a file somewhere, and that would be it. And I just think, you know, podcasts are such an interesting development that I wanted to kind of, it's just a fresher way, I think, of trying to tell a crime story. You know, every crime fiction has an awful lot of journalists in it, but not a lot of podcasters yet. I think it's a fresher way of taking an old sort of trope and updating it a little bit and making it more modern and relevant, I hope.
Are you in the very first stages of drafts with this, or are you quite well in?
Yeah, I'm well in it. It's kind of done to the extent that it'll be going out to publishers again and the industry, and we'll see kind of where it lands and what happens.
And what do you do with that then? Do you have like trusted friends that you kind of give it to and say, let me know what you think, or do you actually leave it to your editor?
No, I do. I share it with like some trusted friends, like you said, to start with. There's a couple of crime writers who I kind of swap work with effectively, and kind of get their thoughts on it, and vice versa. And then it kind of goes to editors and things like that. Yeah. So.
And how are you with constructive criticisms? How do you deal with it?
Well, you have to get a thick skin, don't you, really? And I think you kind of have to sort of detach yourself from the criticism. You know, you kind of have to kind of learn quickly that it's not personal. It's a focus on the work, isn't it? So, and you know, when notes come back on something to improve it, the purpose is to improve that work. You know, it invariably, it's kind of like those stages you go through, it comes back and you just think, phew, no chance, I'm not doing what you suggest, that's going in the bin, you know, I'm brilliant, you're not. Yeah, and then a few days later you start thinking, maybe they've got a point about that there. And then, you know, within a week you're thinking, right, I've got to have to just double down and do it because they're absolutely 100% correct. And I'm the idiot here. Yeah, and then it's not just the small stuff, it's also the big stuff, you know, because sometimes you kind of get lost in the story and a character you might think is a really interesting character, or there's a really interesting kind of subplot going on, but then somebody else will read it and say, you know, that's not as interesting as you think it is. Mm-hmm. You know, and you just kind of, you know, things like that, you know, you can kind of, it's easy to lose sight of all aspects of it because you're just so immersed in it for such a long period of time. So, you know, sometimes it's the bigger picture stuff, sometimes it's the smaller picture stuff. But yeah, I think you just have to kind of accept that when you do get feedback, it is kind of meant in a constructive way. And, you know, it takes a little bit of time to kind of adjust to that, but you kind of, you do, I think, inevitably.
And do you have a set time frame with your publishers? Do you have to, you know, get this book done in a year, or can you literally work on it and submit it when you're ready?
Yeah, mine are published by a small crime publisher, so they're a little bit more kind of flexible in that sense. But I think, yeah, if you can, 12 months to 18 months is probably, you know, kind of what you kind of need to be doing, I think. So, you know, I won't want to stretch it too much. I'll push my luck with them in that sense. But yeah, I think, you know, the bonus of working with a smaller publisher is that flexibility that maybe bigger publishers can't do, because, you know, they have so many books ready to go, and, you know, and they have the distribution of them. It's such a big operation that if you miss your slot, you're probably going to have to wait, you know, maybe 6 months for the next opportunity to get in there. So different size publishers have different ways of doing things. So yeah, I've been very lucky so far, but yeah, a deadline's never heard of us sometimes.
And future projects, have you got anything you can let us know about, or ideas?
Well, so the podcaster book is kind of starting to float out there a little bit with people. So we'll, you know, that'll hopefully be picked up, say, his fingers crossed, before too much longer, and we'll see what happens with that. So yeah, I'm just thinking about new ideas at the moment. I'm writing a crime novel that's not set in Hull, just to kind of challenge myself to see if I can do it as much as anything. And I'm also just kind of generating ideas what might be the next Joe Geraghty novel. So yeah, it just feels like after finishing one novel, there's so many possibilities that you can kind of tackle and take on. It's just choosing the right one, the one that's going to have the legs to get you through maybe 12 months worth of writing and 90,000 words. So yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I'm quite enjoying the challenge of writing something not set in Hull and something set 25 years ago. So it's kind of pre-technology, you know, in the sense that my character he's not got a mobile phone to use, he can't rely on CCTV, those type
we
of
remember
things.
Remember them days, don't we?
Yeah, I absolutely do. This is the worry. I don't have to do too much research in a lot of ways. But that, yeah, that, you know, you know, when you read crime novels and you watch crime dramas on the television, you know, you kind of forget, don't you, just how much we take for granted with mobile phones and cameras and surveillance and things. So to write a novel where people don't have those tools at their disposal is kind of a really interesting challenge, especially as a writer, because you've got to kind of figure out ways to get your character around somewhere, and you've got to be asking the right people the right questions, and you can't just rely on technology and computers to do it for them. So it's very...
And have you got a location where you've set this yet, or are you still working?
Yes, it's going to be set in London. In 1995, okay. So it's kind of set at the height of Britpop.
Brilliant.
And there's a lot of, you know, because it's one of those kind of areas where obviously there was lots of brilliant things happening, but also a very dark side to it as well. You know, there's an awful lot of drugs kicking around those sort of scenes and organised crime. So, you know, you're always kind of looking for both sides of the story, I think, as a novelist, aren't you? You're trying to get under the skin of it a little bit. So,
and how do you go about your research for that? Are you going to go and visit the locations, or...?
Well, I actually found online, I managed to find an old copy of the Melody Maker. I remember the old music magazines. And I found it on eBay, and it's because it's got a map of Camden in it when it was published in the middle of June 1995. So it's got all the pubs on it, all the greasy spoons where they'd be eating, all the old record shops, all the old clothes shops and everything. It was just an absolute find.
Wow.
So that's kind of like the backbone of my kind of geography for the novel. And just reading generally around, you know, there's such an awful lot of books being written about those years, you know, Cool Britannia and Britpop. So I've just been kind of reading those for context, so I can kind of remind myself of the sort of what was going on in the world around that time and how it was being kind of reported and perceived. And, you know, listening to lots of music as well from that era.
Yeah,
so that's been no great hardship, really.
Great.
So, yeah. So, yeah, it's a fun challenge to kind of write something like that and just see if I can do it, really.
Yeah. And do you still feel as enthusiastic and inspired now as you did at the start, or do you go in like peaks and troughs with it, or is this new project really?
The writing of it is, the writing is brilliant, because, you know, that's just something you do and it's very personal, I suppose, to you. You know, the actual business side of it, when you have to get it published and you have to kind of wait for it to come out and all that type of stuff, that's a very different type of ball game. It's almost like you kind of lose ownership, I suppose, of your work in that sense, because it becomes something that's shared with other people who all kind of read it and have their own opinion on it and maybe interpret it how they kind of interpret it. So, you know, the actual writing of it is brilliant, Yeah, that's kind of, I think every writer loves the actual writing. You know, that's kind of like the creative bit, isn't it? The bit where you kind of, it's just you and a laptop and a story. But yeah, then yeah, you get kind of the bonus then of going to festivals and trying to and talking to people about it and meeting readers and things like that. But yeah, you know, you kind of, it kind of comes out of your grasp a little bit, I suppose, at that point, and it's kind of how it's perceived in the wider world. So
have you got any kind of advice or tips? Like, some authors might deliver workshops and writing workshops, or some have like tips and advice that they wish they'd known when they were starting out, and if they wish they knew, then they would be able to change their experience. Have you got any tips for listeners that are maybe writing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest tip you can give somebody really is just to sit down and do it. You know, to a degree, you can learn, you can come to lots of these workshops. You know, we've done some through the festival with the libraries and things like that, and you can kind of explain structure to people, and you can explain theory to people so they can understand kind of how a story works and how you kind of create something. But the idea has to come from that person, you know, and so does the drive to tell that story as well. So I think all you can really, or the only tip you can really pass on, I think, with any kind of sincerity really, is to sit down and do it. You know, that's the only way, you know, that's the only way that it kind of happens, is by sitting down at your laptop for an hour a day and writing and just, you know, learning the craft really. But yeah, you know, I think it's just really showing up and doing the work. You know, that's kind of, there is no magic secret.
Do you think it's a confidence element there, to actually have the confidence to sit and start doing it?
Yeah, there is an element of that, isn't there, as well? Because I know when we do workshops as well, you know, when you speak to people, they sometimes feel a little bit scared about doing it. But I think the way to approach it is just to do it, because you don't have to share it with anybody. You know, you don't have to try and get what you've done published. You know, you don't necessarily have to kind of say to people that you're doing it even. You know, it took me a long time to actually kind of let people know that I was writing. You know, it was something I just did for myself for a couple of years, and just, you know, nobody knew other than probably, you know, my wife type of thing. It was just something that I did for myself. And I guess then you start to maybe build up a little bit of confidence that you could kind of share it with people and see what the reaction is. But yeah, I understand why people do find it a scary thing to do, or feel that, you know, I'm not a writer. Why should I can't do this? I'm not a writer. When you know, the reality is that anybody can. Everybody's a writer. If they want to be a writer, it's just, I suppose, it's ultimately what you do with it, really. But there's no reason why you have to share it.
There's lots of elements, I guess, like finding a publisher, getting that support, that backup. Did you find that process difficult at the start to find a publisher?
I was very lucky. Yeah, I was very lucky that when I finished my first, when I say I finished my first novel, it was actually my second novel, because I'd written one that I knew kind of wasn't kind of going to be published. You know, I just knew sort of instinctively that it wasn't kind of good enough, really. But I finished it because I felt like if I didn't finish it, I've never finished a book. You know, it felt like something I had to just kind of go through to learn the process to get from A to Z to say that I'd done it. And so it was really my second novel that became my first novel in that sense, and was the first one that was published. And I sent it out to some crime publishers, and I think it got picked up within maybe 3 or 4 months, which was kind of obscenely quick, really, for the book world. So, you know, I was very kind of lucky with that.
I think it's timing, don't you? A lot of people say it's timing.
It was very lucky that the publisher was looking specifically for novels that were set in London. You know, they wanted them set in the north of England. So it was kind of right place at the right time in that respect. But yeah, it's a strange industry like that, where, you know, you just need that one kind of lucky break at one moment, and it can come quickly, it can take years. There's no rules for it, really. But kind of on the other side of the coin, I had an agent for a while to sell my work, and that didn't go well at all, ultimately.
You learn from these things, I guess.
You do, exactly. You know, it was a nice man and everything. I mean, you know, and it was kind of a great experience, but my work didn't sell. He couldn't sell it to a bigger publisher. So that relationship kind of came to an end pretty quickly, where other people have had, you know, really good long-standing relationships with their agents. When I speak to them, it's just kind of, it's such an unpredictable industry in that sense. So yeah, I feel like I've had some very lucky breaks, and, you know, I've also had my kind of share of kicks back down the ladder as well. It's kind of like, if you're kind of going to call it a game of snakes and ladders, I've kind of had a bit of both, I guess. But yeah, it's one, you just have to kind of just keep chipping away, keep trying and keep trying, and hopefully somebody will say yes. Just keep writing. And I think as well, you can't be a writer without being a reader. You know, it's that kind of backdrop of knowledge you get from reading, especially, you know, if you say you want to write a crime novel, then, you know, like 80% of what I read is probably crime novels. And I think, you know, if you want to write a crime novel, then that's what you should be reading. So you should be checking out what other authors are doing. And, you know, I think the way you read starts to change a little bit when you're a writer, because you're kind of maybe thinking, why do I like this novel? What is it about it that kind of appeals to me? And sort of the same if you're not enjoying a novel, you know, why is this not quite working for me? Why is it not resonating with me? And, you know, you kind of think more as a writer than maybe as a reader. You know, it's something that you can't kind of just switch off, I don't think. So, you know, I think reading is such an important part of being a writer as well.
It's kind of research, I guess, into styles and approaches and how they set their story out, and you will see it differently from a reader because you're a writer, how they've laid that story out. You might be able to dissect it a bit and break it down as well.
Yeah, I think so. That's very, I think, you know, whether I want to do that or not, that's what I kind of do when I'm reading. You know, I'm always kind of looking at it thinking, you know, why do I like this? What is it about this author that I like, or this story that I like, or if it's something I'm not enjoying, it's kind of why does it not work for me? So yeah, I can kind of just enjoy a novel for the sake of enjoying it, but I can't stop myself also thinking as a writer as I'm reading it as well. But I think, you know, that for anybody who's starting to think about writing, then just kind of thinking, I guess, more critically about what they're reading is also kind of quite an interesting challenge, you know, and something that will inform their own writing as they go forward.
So talking about books, do you have like a favourite author or a book that you go back to or has really had an effect on you in your life? One book that you can remember that really changed you? Have you got any titles?
Yeah. Well, I guess one that I always go back to is Jack's Return Home by Ted Lewis, which was filmed as Get Carter, starring Michael Caine. Yeah, and it was a book that would, I mean, it's been such an important.
I didn't realise it was a book first.
Yeah, it was a book, and it was set. Well, Ted lived in Barton upon Humber and went to Hull College, to the art college in the late 50s as a teenager. And if you actually read the book instead of watching the film, the book is set around Scunthorpe and Barton. And you can still, if you walk along the waterfront of Barton, you can pick off where Jack Carter gets shot in the film because you can match it up. On the film, it's like a kind of like a curl. Slaggy, isn't it, where he gets shot? But in the book, it's that kind of like Humber estuary in the background, and he's kind of on the marshy sort of land at the front of Barton. So where the old brickworks used to be, I don't know if you can kind of picture them. So yeah, you know, it's amazing. And it was a book I read before I was writing and loved. I just kind of like loved the sort of like the noir-y sort of really terse and short and sharp way that he wrote. But yeah, and I didn't know at first that it was. I kind of knew it first as a film rather than a book. But then I kind of met Nick Tripler, who was one of the people I do Hull Noir with, and he was working on a biography of Ted Lewis, because Ted Lewis spent a lot of his time in the region. So it became kind of like quite like a life-changing book in that respect, because it kind of created a festival for us. We worked with his publishers, and we've now got some of his older books back in print again, including Flender, which is a crime novel set in Hull in 1970, which was out of print for a number of years, and it's just fantastic. But yeah, I think it's just a book that really kind of charmed with me, what I wanted to write and how I wanted to write it. But also it was amazing to find that he actually kind of lived in the same region as I did as well. And, you know, so much of his work is set around the Humber area, or certainly his key work is set around the Humber area as well. So, you know, that's one of those books I just kind of will always kind of look to, I think, as a reader and a writer.
And any other authors that you love to read and you're excited when the next title comes out?
Yeah, there's some. I mean, I'm currently reading the new Michael Connelly novel. You know, I think he's probably the finest crime writer, I think, out there at the moment. Him and Ian Rankin, they're still the gold standard, you know. And it's amazingly inspirational as well, because Michael's latest book, I think it's about his 30th or something like that. So, you know, somebody like that could be just coasting along and just kind of, you know, almost just kind of raking the money in if they wanted to, but he's still writing better and better books. You know, you can tell he's still doing the work and he's still striving and he still wants to improve and he wants to kind of keep his position, I guess, at the top of the tree. So, you know, there's a lot to take away from that, I think, as a writer. And just as a reader, I just love his character, Harry Bosch, the detective. I think he's just fantastic. And they're just a brilliant sort of series that capture modern day America. And, you know, I think if you capture modern day America, you kind of capture the spirit of all the world, don't you, essentially? And a lot of those issues in the books are the issues that we're talking about now in the news and in the debates. You know, I think that's what crime's really, really strong for. You know, like in the current Michael Connelly book, there's a lot of debate about Black Lives Matter and things like that. And it's stuff that's out there in the real world, isn't it, that we're thinking about and talking about and discussing. And crime novels, I think, are kind of like a perfect vehicle for doing that, really. So yeah, he's always the writer I look for.
And to just completely relax, How do you do that? How do you cope with stress? What's your go-to thing? Do you go for a walk? Is it reading? Is it listening to music? Watching a film?
Yeah, it's kind of all of those things, really. I mean, I guess my main thing away from writing is football. I love watching football. I've always been sort of like football mad, you know, from a little boy up to like a middle-aged man. I kind of kicked the habit. And I've started doing walking football in the last couple of years down at North Ferriby, which it's football where you walk, basically. You're not allowed to run.
It's just football as where you are.
But it's harder than you think, and you know, and when it's like walking, like they do on the, you know, like in the Olympics, where it's walking but they're kind of shuffling. So it's a bit like that, really. It's mainly it's a sort of 45 plus age sort of thing that we tend to play at. So it's kind of anywhere between about 45 and 65 ish, I would say. So I'm kind of still at the younger end of the spectrum, which is many more years to play. But you know, I can't.
What a great idea, and
yeah,
it's all
I mean,
just
to
meet up socially as well
absolutely,
and have that time together.
Because I used to play like Sunday League back when I was in my 20s and stuff, you know, and I've always loved, you know, I've always played for teams and I've always loved doing it. And then you get kind of into your 30s and you can't kind of run like you used to be able to run, and you know, and your body hurts a lot more and things. But so this is a brilliant way of still being able to sort of like kick a ball around with people and have a laugh. And like you say, it's a social thing. It's meeting up with people once a week and just kind of that weird sort of male thing of like, I play football with these people once a week. And I know the names, but I couldn't tell you a single thing about them other than the names. But we just join up and have a laugh and kick a ball around. And, you know, it's just exhilarating again. It's brilliant. So that's kind of like the hour when I do that every week is probably the 1 hour of the week where I'm not thinking about my book, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's for you, isn't it? You're not a dad, you're not a writer, you're just doing that as escapism. It's really important. It's becoming more and more a hot topic now, isn't it, for people to have that escapism and find something that helps them wind down, relax, have downtime.
Yeah, I think it's probably all been thinking about something during the pandemic, haven't we, where we've been locked away in our houses and you know, we've all probably reassessed what's important to us and how we're going to reconfigure what we do as we hopefully, as you say, return to some sort of normality again. And I think everything has changed for people, hasn't it? And that will be something that is interesting as a writer as well, because, you know, I'll be kind of thinking, how does that kind of sort of filter into my characters and into my stories? But no, you're right, you know, just having other things away from writing is really important. And you mentioned walking, and that's kind of one that I really like walking, you know, partly to clear my head and partly just to think when I'm about what I'm going to write as well. So, you know, I've done like walking across on the bridge and back. I think if I can do that in about an hour, that's enough time to think what I need to get done when I'm writing. Yeah, and I think as a writer, you know, when I kind of hit a sort of knotty part of the novel where I think, all right, I've got to make this kind of, these two bits connect up, and you kind of, when you're trying to force the idea to come, it doesn't want to come, but you know, when you're just walking for the sake of walking, you know, just enjoying the fresh air and so on, that's when it often just kind of slots into place, when you're not maybe thinking about it so deliberately, when it's a little bit more subconscious at work. So, you know, I think, yeah, being a writer, it's kind of learning those sort of like tools that help you that you don't necessarily, nobody can really teach you that, I suppose, really, but it's just kind of learning from experience and process.
And it's so funny that you absolutely love football, but you've never written about it.
No, my character, Joe Geraghty, is a former rugby league player. I mean, I do like rugby league. And I chose him to be a rugby league player rather than a footballer just because I knew rugby league is such an interesting part of the city's history, isn't it? And story, that sort of sense of division down the middle of the city.
Yeah, especially the rivalry,
The rivalry, you know, it's just something that you can really play on in the novel. It just gives it a little bit of extra colour, I think. So it was always going to be a rugby league player. when I started to think about that, it's kind of also quite interesting how sport then sort of filters into other areas, because, you know, pre kind of, I guess, COD was in the, you know, up to sort of like the 70s, it was very much East and West, wasn't it, where the boats would come in on the west, the trawler men would live around Hesel Road, and they would go to the Boulevard and watch LFC, and the dockers would be more on the east side of the city, and they'd live in that part of the city where you start to knock down those old houses on Hesel Road. And people start getting dotted all around the city, don't they? The new estates like Orchard Park and Bransome, and that sort of strict east-west division starts to disappear. Where now, you know, now if you went on to Bransome, I suspect you'll find just as many Hull FC fans as you would Hull KR fans. You know, that kind of strict land on the middle down the River Hull, I think, has long gone. And it's kind of an interesting sort of way that the city has changed and developed, and that's kind of come about through rugby league.
Thanks for listening. We're now available on all the major podcast platforms. Just search for Hull Libraries. So if you enjoyed this podcast, you can get all the latest episodes as soon as they're out.
In the meantime, if you want to check out any of the services at Hull Libraries, please go to our website, hcandl.co.uk/libraries, or we also have channels on all the social medias, including Twitter and Facebook. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.